The host has arrived.
Hi, this is Erin Harden with the Department of Education and Early Development. Is there anyone else on the line?
Hey, Erin, this is Brian Heimbigner. I'm just listening in right now. So far, it's just myself. I will let you know if anybody comes online and any board members. I'll unmute their line as well, so they'll probably give a shout out when they get put in.
Yes, they typically do. Thanks. And I'll look for your text for those who wish to give public testimony. So thank
you. Sounds good. Yeah,
okay.
No problem. Bye.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, Chair Fields. This is Erin Harden with the department in Juneau, and we can hear you.
Oh, good. Thank you. Are there any other board members online? I know Barbara, you're there in person, right?
Yes, I am.
Yes, Barbara's with us here in person, and I believe Member Scott is on the line. Member Kolasaki is on the line. Member Loring is on the line. That's who I have so far. I'll let any others identify themselves if they've joined us.
It's Colonel Van Meter. I'm here.
Okay, it sounds like...
Becca.
Hi.
Hello.
Let's go ahead and call the meeting to order then. At 12:02, and if we can get a roll call, please.
All right, Member Loring?
I'm here.
Colonel Van Meter?
Present.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Hemshute?
I'm here.
Member Kolasaki?
Kowalski,
I'm sorry. Member Scott?
Here.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Here.
Member Van Deest? And Chair Fields?
Here. Like we have a quorum.
Yes, Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. If we can stand wherever you are and for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. And next, adoption of the agenda for December 18th, 2018.
This is Member Thompson. I move adoption of the agenda with the removal of item number 6, executive session.
Do I have a second?
Second by Van Deest.
Okay, thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
This is Commissioner Johnson. I'll just, everybody may know, but I'll just point out the removal of that item is because of some scheduling conflict with the student candidates, and so we're working to make sure everybody can be here.
Great. Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Member Loring? Colonel Van Meter?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton? Second Vice Chair Hemshute?
Yes.
Member Kowalski? Member Scott?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Van Deest?
Yes.
Chair Fields?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing no changes, motion passes. Next up is disclosures of potential conflicts of interest. I haven't heard of any, but this is the time if there are any to please make that aware to us. Okay, now we're on to public comments. Do we have anybody on the line for public comment?
Yes, we do. And we'll start with those online. Chair Fields, the first, I believe, is from Matsu School District, a group, Jeff Blackburn, Stephen Anderson, and Victoria Flint.
OK.
Okay, great. We'll go ahead and allow them to speak. Since you're a group, you'll have up to 5 minutes, so go ahead.
All right, perfect. We'll just kind of go around the room. Good morning, and thank you for all you guys do for the kids and community of Alaska. My name is Jeff Blackburn on behalf of the Matthew Burroughs School District. I work in our Office of Instruction. I've been working in education for 11 years. I've been fortunate to teach mathematics, robotics, and computer science. In my current role, I support teachers with professional development and work on our own IT team on our district's technology roadmap. Computer science represents an incredible opportunity for our students and community, and having a shared set of standards would allow for shared vocabulary, consistent outcomes, and would support school districts that are interested in creating these types of courses for their students. I believe these standards would represent a fantastic tool to facilitate measurement, communication, and students working to gain 21st century skills or prepare for careers in the field of computer science. I would just ask that the board consider the proposed computer science standards as they are written. Thank you for your time, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions you have, and I'll move it down the table.
Hello, my name is Steven Anderson, and I'm with the Matsu Burroughs School District. I'm an ed tech in the Office of Instruction as well. I've been working in Matsu Burroughs for 14 years as a math teacher and educational technologist. I've worked with many of the different curriculum adoption committees and have represented the technology needs for the district across subjects. The importance of computer science has become more and more prevalent and needs to be standardized with common language and pathways. I would ask that the board consider the proposed computer science standards as they are written, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Victoria Flint, and I work in the Office of Instruction for the Matsu School District. I was recently privileged to attend a CS conference in Seattle, and because 21st century careers are founded in CS, the theme throughout this event centered on the need to increase instruction of CS. Just as reading and writing are academic pillars, computer science, which is essentially mathematics, logic, and problem solving, too, should be a standards-based subject area, equally accessible to all students. At this conference, they really emphasized clear standards and thorough professional development. Teachers then can embed computer science concepts into other subject areas throughout their daily instruction, expanding these critical concepts to a more diverse audience. The process of adopting standards is a critical first step in growing our own, developing Alaska's youth to be more prepared for the computational thinking demands of developing job markets. Just this morning, in fact, I scanned the 192 jobs posted on Workplace Alaska. One would be very hard-pressed to find a posting that doesn't include the skills and training involved with computational thinking. If we don't accept and adopt these proposed CS standards, we run the risk of deliberately reducing Alaska's future corporate and organizational diversity from backgrounds and a variety of skills. I would ask that the board consider the proposed computer science standards as they are written, and thank you very much for your time.
That's our whole group here. Thanks, you guys.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you for your words, and thank you for your support. Next up?
Next up on the phone, we have Tim Parker.
Okay, great. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Chair Fields. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. My name is Tim Parker. I'm the president of NEA Alaska. I'm a teacher from Fairbanks. Teach high school English. I'm not doing this job. As a representative for 13,000 educators around the state, I just want to say thank you for the work that the department's done and that you as the state board have done, especially in line of what's been going on with the earthquakes. Our focus is always on student learning. We think about that every day. It's what motivates my members and educators throughout the state to get in their classrooms and do the best work they can do. Obviously, the earthquake caused quite a bit of disruption to that. Students weren't at school for a while, but classrooms really have been damaged. And in three cases so far, we've had schools where they've had to move to another location. And I'm sure that's going to come up on your agenda for some discussion. Working with those educators as they move from one school to another is really challenging. And communication becomes really important. and communication both to the educators from the administration as well as with the students and families to know when, where, and how everything is going to place. And a lot of disruption as people are trying to put classrooms back together. And, you know, one of the things that really surfaced almost immediately as people moved to our building, we're suddenly in a new bare room, is how much of their own money that educators put into setting up classrooms. And you can't just like snap your fingers and make a new classroom appear. And so a lot of them looked pretty darn bare and didn't have all the regular tools that teachers normally need in order to be super successful with kids and their learning. So NEALASKA has put together an earthquake support fund. It seemed like the right thing to do, and it's on our website, people have had a chance to donate, and we're, as I've heard from educators in other parts of the state, they wanted to contribute to MATSU and Anchorage and make sure they were supporting those schools as they were going through that. I'd also like to comment briefly on, prior to the earthquake, we had an election, and we have a new governor, Governor Dunleavy, and that's all taken place rather quickly. And, you know, when I think about elections, I always start thinking about students. You know, they don't get to vote, yet sometimes they're buffeted by political winds, and it's our job not to let that happen. And I was very excited to hear that Commissioner Johnson is staying. I think that's important, and in conversations with him, and I've heard good things about where the governor is heading and his thoughts as far as education. So I'm happy to continue in the support for Alaska's Education Challenge. It's been a lot of work that we put in, all of you have put in over the last couple of years, and we want to see that partnership continue to grow and succeed and get support from all sides. And it's nice that the new governor is leaning into that work because, you know, if you reread all that stuff, and I'm that type of person that goes back and rereads all the notes over and over, we've gone through the awareness portion of the Alaska's Education Challenge and, you know, creating the sense of urgency, really getting everyone together, pulling together the different groups. And now we've been working through the transition portion as we try to get everyone on board and really start to nail down what we're doing. But we're right at that phase where implementation is sitting right in front of us, and we can start talking about the trajectories. I think I'm looking forward to hearing what the commissioner has to say about the trajectories and where they're going. Of course, we as educators are really excited about the possibilities there. Putting third grade reading right at the front of the list is fabulous. Numbers around the state, educators think that there's a lot of urgency there, and dedicating a lot of focus to that collectively could be a game changer for us. Of course, GTE is also on that, and attracting and retaining is a major issue. That one continues to be a growing problem as educators are leaving the state at larger and larger numbers. And you guys don't control all the cards in that one. The retirement issue is becoming paramount for them. But I'm excited where we're going, and I look forward to hearing what you guys talk about and your direction that you give us at this point. But I can tell you on behalf of the educators of Alaska, we're really excited about leaning into this work together and building great schools, great public schools for all of our kids. So thank you so much, and have a wonderful meeting.
Yeah, thank you, Tim, and thank you for the work that you do for the educators in the state. Any next up?
Yes, next up is Keith Brady with the City of Sitka.
Okay, welcome, Keith.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for your time. I am the municipal administrator for the city and borough of Sitka, and the city is interested in purchasing a piece of property that's about 3 acres to develop a seaplane base that the Department of Education owns. The city has completed a master plan that includes a preferred site, which is the one we're looking at, and economic impact study back in 2002. And it was updated in 2012 and 2016 with the same spot being preferred. Our current seaplane base is dilapidated and really not in an optimal position for our seaplanes. This project is about $16 million. and will be mostly, hopefully if not all, funded by FAA grants, and could have a very positive impact on the economy of Sitka. I've spoken with the Commissioner Johnson and the superintendent of Mount Edgecombe High School and the Mount Edgecombe High School Advisory Board. In the memo to Mount Edgecombe High School from Commissioner Johnson, he lays out a process to gather input and evaluate written proposals. In the recent advisory board meeting that I was able to attend with Mount Edgecombe High School, they approved and a letter that basically stated their continued support is contingent upon the sale of the land at fair value. That's one. Two, that the funds remain with the school and preferably in an endowment fund for their school. And third, that we pursue a preferred traffic route to the site. The estimate for the acquisition of the land or the purchase of the property is between $600,000 and $850,000. And I wanted to bring this before you and ask that in your next board meeting that this is brought up as a discussion item and an action item if we could, but if not at that meeting, maybe an action item at a later meeting. And I really look forward to discussion at the future meetings, and I thank you for your time and consideration of this proposal.
Okay, thank you. And I'm sure the department's making notes on that, and I'll discuss that with the commissioner about getting that as a discussion item. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next up.
Next is Mike Robinson.
Okay. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hey, I'm here to speak about I think it's agenda item number 5. It's the National School Library Standards. And I think you guys are at the beginning of the process of exploring those, and I just wanted to speak to that for a few minutes. I'm a past president of the Alaska Library Association, and I'm a professor of library science at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. And I believe Deborah is going to give a presentation on the standards a little bit later, but I just wanted to say that the Alaska Library Association, this is getting these standards adopted is one of our priorities for this year. For the association as a whole. And I also just wanted to point out that, and Deborah will probably go into this more, the standards were developed that are in place now were developed in 1999. And now we're almost 20 years later, and you can imagine it's time that the way things have changed, and it's time to adopt the new standards. And the ones that are being proposed for K through 12 actually align very well with the information literacy standards adopted by university libraries like UAA, which are endorsed by the Association of College and Research Libraries. They're very learner-centered, focused, and looking at them, they would fit well. A student who, I'm not saying this right, these standards would prepare a student for university work much better than the current ones would. So anyway, thank you for a chance to comment on this.
Great, thank you. Next up.
Our next gentleman is Greg Bianchi with Microsoft.
Okay, welcome, Greg.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony. My name is Greg Bianchi, and I'm a senior program officer with Microsoft Philanthropies. Over the last several months, I've had the privilege of contributing to Alaska's K-12 computer science standards. And at Microsoft, we look forward to continued partnership on the state's efforts to expand computer science education broadly. The new computer science standards represent an important opportunity for Alaska's education system and ultimately, I think, Alaska's economy. The existing jobs alone represent a nearly $62 million opportunity in terms of annual salaries. And importantly, these jobs can be found across every sector in Alaska, including traditional industries now undergoing digital transformation, such as mining, forestry, and fishing. The tremendous and widespread participation in this month's Alaska Code Week activities is a clear indication of the growing enthusiasm for computer science education among educators themselves, students, and really even citizens of Alaska. And as the momentum continues, so does the need to provide educators with guidance afforded by a unifying set of standards. From curriculum planning to professional development, students will ultimately benefit when the educator's work is really aligned to a defined set of concepts and practices. In my role as program manager at Microsoft Philanthropies, I've actually had the opportunity to participate in standards committees across several states, and as a result, I can say with confidence that Alaska has created an exceptional set of standards that are entirely worthy of public review this spring. And by acting soon, I think we have the opportunity to equip educators with a key roadmap in guiding their planning for the 2019-20 school year. And this, in turn, will equip Alaska students to fully participate in the Alaska economy for decades to come. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Anyone else?
We have no more callers on the line, Chair Fields, but we do have one in-person public testimony here in Juneau, and that is Dr. Lisa Skiles-Carity.
Okay. Great. Welcome.
I'll welcome her to the table now.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
good afternoon. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles-Carity. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council School Administrators, representing superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and other school administrators in Alaska, as well as the Alaska Staff Development Network, which I think this board recognizes as a leading voice in professional learning across Alaska. And I want to first thank you all for the work that you did over the last year, both as the State Board and certainly as the staff of the Department of Education and Early Development. I know how thin you are, I guess you would say, in terms of your capacity, and I think you just do an outstanding job. And on behalf of our members, we're very grateful for the incredible work that you each carry and want to thank you. We're very pleased with the continuation of Dr. Johnson as commissioner and stand ready to continue to work closely with him through this next administration, and are pleased to work with the new Governor Dunleavy and his administration, and certainly the things that he outlined in his campaign positively focused on career to technical education and reading by third grade and some of those pieces that we all know are good ideas. So we're ready to work with the department on those really positively focused things. Also really pleased our members are to have Tammy Van Wy joining the staff. She's well known to superintendents as coming from those ranks and is fantastic. And we just think that's a really positive addition, and we're really pleased to learn that. Had two things I wanted to just mention. The first was, and it's been testified here today, we do hope that you will please consider the proposed computer science standards in the near term. Our organization has worked closely with the department on development of those standards and are a partner to you with code.org, and just see them as critical for all students in Alaska. And so completely recognize kind of a slowdown in terms of a new administration and getting feet on the ground and that kind of thing, but really urge the board to move forward with the computer science standards. They're ready to go. They're very good, and our students need them. So wanted to urge, for the reasons already outlined better than I could earlier in testimony, urge you to go forward on those. And the second is, I just think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about and acknowledge in the aftermath of the earthquake situation, you know, how incredible the leadership was exhibited by superintendents and leaders in those school districts. Their decision-making focus around student safety was incredible, and I think their crisis communication was impeccable. I really think all around it's a celebration of preparedness on the behalf of school districts and our members who really stepped up to the plate and just showed what leadership is about. I want to commend the commissioner for being out immediately in those schools and supporting those superintendents and leadership teams as they dealt with this, and your staff. But I wanted to call out Dr. Bishop and Dr. Goyette and Mike Hanley and Sean Dusick. And am I forgetting anyone?
Idea.
Yes.
Jim.
Yes, absolutely. Jamaria, I think saw what we do well, and that is to prioritize students and student safety and making sure that that we react in an emergency situation with those interests first. So I think sometimes society is easy to jump on the negative pieces around education or what they perceive as negative, but we do need to stop and celebrate what I see and I think many others see as huge successes in terms of districts and education being prepared for what was the unexpected. So on that note, appreciate all of you again. Really look forward to working forward with you in the next year. And please call on us if we can be of assistance to you in any way. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Lisa, and thank you for your support. Is that the last one, or is there any others?
No, we have no more public testimony, Chair Field.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll move on to our first agenda item, update on the State Board of Education priorities.
All right. Thank you, Chair Fields, and thanks for our, all those that made public comment. This item is really just an update for the board. I just want the board to know that I have been communicating with the governor and the governor's office regarding education priorities. As you can imagine, the governor is very passionate and excited to implement an agenda when it comes to education. He's very committed to every student becoming a reader, as you heard him say many times on the campaign trail. He's very committed to every ninth grader being proficient in algebra, and also committed to increasing opportunities for career and technical education, such as specific conversations about coding and computer science. So I can encourage everybody that's provided this very helpful public comment that the governor is also very interested in maximizing those opportunities for students. The AKED Challenge remains a very strong framework and aligns the priorities of the State Board of Education, the stakeholders that have been involved, and Governor Dunleavy. So I'm really just want to say I'm more excited than ever to implement the changes that the State Board of Education has approved and work with this governor. And his excitement regarding education and stakeholders around this state to improve our public education system. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments on this agenda item? Okay, thank you. Next agenda item, board report to the legislature.
And Chair Fields, I'm going to turn it over to Aaron Harden, who is working with the board on this report.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Commissioner. This is Aaron Harden, Information Officer for the department. Just quickly on your cover memo, the board is required to submit a report of their activities to the legislature annually, and what follows the cover memo is a draft of your report. This would be the opportunity if you have any questions, edits, changes you would like to see made, that you bring those up now and I will make note, and then a final draft or a final report will be presented to you at your next meeting for approval. So at this time, I would just like to open it up to board members to jump in if you have any questions or edits you would like to see made to your annual report, and I will take those notes. I'll also note that all the activities from today's meeting will be added to that report as well. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll open it up to any board members that have comments or changes or questions.
This is Sandy Kowalski.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to make note that we need to edit the appendix alphabetizing in alignment with what's presented in the document. In other words, Appendix C doesn't exist in the back, but it's referenced on page 25 of the board packet. Unless I'm missing something in the hand, in the, yeah, I don't see an Appendix C.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
No, good catch, and thank you.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay, well, then if there's not any other comment on this, then we'll move on. I'll give you one last chance.
And Chair Fields, I'll just say if somebody catches something or sees something later, feel free to email or call us, because any changes that we incorporate will obviously be in the public document that comes before the board for approval later. So don't hesitate to reach out to us if you see something later on.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll move on to item three, Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation Update.
All right. So today we are just making the board aware that the Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation has reviewed both UAF and UAA's teacher preparation programs. We have received UAF's report, and I really want to congratulate them for a successful review and several high remarks on their review. That was led by now the education dean, Steve Atwater, and I just want to compliment him and all the staff up there for their great review. We have not received UAA's report, but the CAPE folks, the council, their representatives have met with UAA last week. Once we receive their report, then we'll schedule to have a work session with the board, including representatives from both UAF and UAA, to review the information and make any recommendations needed for board approval. We are aware that there are some significant issues with their review. I want you to know I have met with President Johnson, and I think it's important for the State Board of Education to know that he is fully aware of the issues that that report is going to point out with UAA's program, and he has not waited for the report to come out to begin making substantial changes, including new leadership, a new chancellor, executive dean of the College of Education and director of the education program, as well as a number of other things that will be shared with the board at the appropriate time. So this really is just an opportunity to make the state board aware that those reviews took place. You have a role in that you approve the teacher preparation programs at the universities in this state, and so these reviews are very important to you, and the information that you'll get from them is very important to you as you make decisions on approving these programs for teacher preparation. So just an awareness, we don't have anything other to share with the board, but Sandra Meredith's here in case you do have questions, but we'll be sending you more information later as we get it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Member Thompson. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay. Not knowing what the issues are with UAA, and I know we'll find out eventually, can you enlighten us a little as to if these changes that need to be made can be made without a big disruption to the program or the students who are currently in the program? Are they fixable things? Will the program have to be shut down, or can it continue while changes are made?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I have answers to all those questions because we haven't seen the report. We just know there's issues. We don't know specifically what those will be. But I will say that, you know, as I've considered what the recommendation will be to the state board, I think that we keep that page blank and also be creative. So maybe it's not either or approve or disapprove of their program. Maybe it's a way that the board works with the program to get regular updates to make sure they're moving in the direction that the state board wants to. And then I'll also say, you know, I think we're in a better spot because President Johnson has kind of grabbed this with both hands and said, I'm going to address it, and has already started that process. So it's not as if they're waiting for the board for the report to come out. President Johnson has named Steve Atwater as the dean, and so there's already work being happening to address the issue. So by the time we get the report and the board meets, I think they'll have a list of things they've already done and plan to do, and then the board will have to make a decision from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, thanks for the heads up, and we kind of look forward to the report, I guess. But thanks for the heads up and for keeping us up to speed on it. Next item, item number four, Discovery Peak Charter School Renewal.
Yep, so the board's being asked to approve the application for the Discovery Peak Charter School for a period of 10 years, terminating on July 1st, 2029, and Paul Pressing is here to walk the board through that and to answer any questions that you might have.
Hi, for the record, this is Paul Pressing with the Department of Education and Development. So as you'll see, there's a little bit of a typo in the agenda. This is not a renewal. It's a new application for a charter school. And it was approved in June 5th, 2018. It took a little while to get this approved due to staff changes at the department. And I also want to let the board members know I haven't forgotten about the charter school report, but we've had a little change in our data team, too. So between those changes in staff with charter and the data team, it's been a little delayed. But
and I'll just go in. We implemented a brand new accountability system that took up about 6 months.
Right.
Yeah.
On short staff. So in the board memo, based on board comments in the past, I didn't include the rating template, but it was compliant through all the state's application. But I did include the board, the Fairbanks North Star Rural School District board meetings, so you can see the discussion, because I believe that's what board members wanted to see what the local school district discussion was. And then behind that is the one-page summary of the school and what it's, kind of it's a brief high-level overview. And online is Allison Bartlett and other staff from the Discovery Peak Charter School that can answer the more in-depth questions that I'm sure you may or may not have. Allison, are you there?
Yep, we're here.
Okay, so if boards have any questions, we have Allison Barton staff available.
Yeah, and Chair Fields, I know there's some folks that have questions, so I'll let you facilitate that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and board member, any questions or comments are on this agenda item?
Yes, this is Member Van Deest, and I do have some questions for the charter school representatives that are there. My first question is the results of the needs assessment that you guys did, and how is this charter school addressing the needs of the students in the community that's different from the school that is located there in North Pole?
So kind of our three most defined differences that we've been focusing on is the added activity that we're plugging into our school day, as well as really individualizing our morning time curriculum. Our afternoons are very interest-based, but at the same time kind of guiding through the district's expectations for curriculum, but in more of a multi-age setting. And multi-age is not a very commonly used grouping system in the other schools that are local here, as well as our explorations really tie the students into their community, more so than just place-based education, but also putting a big emphasis on the service aspect and seeing the issues that are in our classroom, or not necessarily our classroom, but within the classroom or the school or the community of North Pole, and how the kids can make a difference or how they can seek change in the community that they're living in. So it's kind of an interwoven mix of those three big ideas.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question for you guys, and I'm sorry to be peppering you with these. I wish I could actually see you face-to-face, but that's not possible. So I'm looking at the Alaska school laws and regulations on charter schools. And in section 14.03.255. It's where it's talking about organization and operation of a charter school. And it says the charter school shall meet regularly with parents and teachers to renew, evaluate, and improve the operations of the charter school. That's in section B3. And I'm just curious to know what tools and data will you use for your evaluation?
Well, our academic policy committee that we've been working with to develop this application will kind of kick off the school year. We've built into our bylaws that there is kind of a rotational transition of incoming families and staff on that committee. As far as assessment tools of, you know, how to define that, I think that built into our school community, there's going to be a lot of collaboration. And so just that constant feedback and that constant positive relationship with the families and the staff and the students and having it that team atmosphere, you know, that communication piece is going to be huge. Do you guys have anything to add to that?
No.
Is that what you were after in that?
I know
that within our bylaws, we do have it lined out that there, you know, monthly meetings and so many
and
times per year that there needs to be. It's a, like I said earlier, it's both staff and parents and just invested community members that have an interest in our school. So we try to have a well-rounded group of people as part of that ETC group.
Thank you. I guess I was looking more for the tools that you'll use. You know, like, are you going to do parent surveys or, I mean, how are you going to, you know, quantify your data and actually look at, are the students achieving? I mean, besides the PEAKS test that's given at the state level, how do you know your charter school is succeeding? I guess that's my bottom line question.
Okay. So academically, is that where you're after?
Yeah. And both just in general, because some of the things that you're talking about can't be measured academically, like, you know, out in the community. I think that you got a great concept, don't get me wrong, but I'm just curious on how you're going to quantify your results of a successful charter school.
Well, a big part of our explorations, too, is kind of that project-based learning. And so taking that project-based learning and infusing it with the aspects of the community focus, but through that, you know, the rubrics that we establish as teachers and depending on what grade level we're working on.
Portfolios that students will keep.
Presentations that they give not only to their peers, but we have intentions of far more family nights and things that events that are including more than just our student body. So I think that the practice and the expectation does kind of go to show that that the students are getting engaged in their community. It goes to show that they are finding an interest that they have in a topic and expanding on it. It proves that individualization, it proves that community focus, and it's through their actions. We really want the students to recognize that the correlation between their actions, what they're producing, and how that impacts the community. In terms of the core subject, I will kind of turn things to Sandy. The accelerated reader and accelerated math will kind of be this, I guess, starting point for where we would be as assessment tools for reading and math and language arts, that kind of thing.
And the students are it will be mastery of standards. And as students master the standards, they'll move on. There'll be constant remediation, acceleration, whatever the student needs. The Renaissance program helps us to identify when students are ready to move on and when students need more time. Reports will be generated constantly to ensure students are on track.
So we really have an emphasis, too, on just the flexible grouping. So in our morning, you know, core academic time of language arts and math, the idea is for the kids to be with their grade level teacher. However, within that, we have a lot of flexible grouping opportunities because later in the day, they function as that multi-age. So those teachers are already working together consistently. And as Sandy said, if students are needing more remedial work because they're on the lower end of the spectrum in a certain area, or if they need to be challenged more, then we have that built in as well.
Thank you.
Are we getting at what you're after? I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm familiar with what they do in the Mapsu Borough School District because that's where I currently work. And so I know that we do a lot of MAP testing, and we just finished the winter MAP testing with all of our students at the elementary school that I'm at, and we use AIMSWeb. And I didn't know if you guys were going to use some of that to help with your grouping or just stay with Renaissance Learning, or, you know, because I know how important it is that those students get what they need.
So our weekly assessments will really, as an example, you know, come from things like Renaissance Learning. Mm-hmm. So that's more of a more frequent assessment. Yes, we will be doing MAP testing and all of the ones that the district does throughout. So we'll still be including those as more of a not quite quarterly. I think it's three times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the statewide test and the peaks. So all of those that are already integrated into our district up here in Fairbanks, we'll still be using those as well. Sorry, we thought we were looking for more of a local within our school.
No, actually, you answered a question I didn't even have, so I appreciate that.
Well, good.
This is Barbara Thompson. I have some questions, Chair.
Okay.
Okay, but since you're not operating yet and you have no facility identified yet, are you moving down that road? Do you have any idea where you might start operating in the coming fiscal year, coming school year? That's one question.
Yes, and actually it's pretty exciting to us. There is a local contractor who found out what we were doing, came to us, and said he was interested in building a building for us. Along with that, he had a very prime location in mind for where that school could be built. It's near a 7 through 12 charter school that currently exists here in North Pole. And his timeline is that he could have that building built and ready for move-in early winter, as in like October, November. So that puts us with a little bit of in limbo at the beginning of our school year, but we have contacted a facility here in North Pole that would allow us to use their space as a temporary location. We've been talking to the district on just what the needs would be as far as temporary technology needs and networking and just making sure that capacities and all of the things that the fire marshal would be looking for would be approved for that temporary location as well. And in all honesty, all of our ducks are kind of lining up on that one. So it's been very encouraging.
Okay, so I'm sorry if I missed this, but you're going to have a temporary location and then the building?
Yeah, so the construction would start as soon as our winter allows construction to begin. And so, you know, probably March or April up here, they'll start construction. And the contractor has said that he can have the building done and ready for move-in sometime in the October, November timeframe. And so our temporary would get us started in August, hypothetically, and until the completion of the building, and then we would make that transition. And both buildings would be suitable in size and classroom space for the school. And really, truly, their location or their proximity to each other, the temporary and the permanent, are like less than a quarter mile apart.
And the funding for the building is not an issue with the school district?
The funding of the building would come out of our school charter school's budget. So we've already worked with the contractor. The contractor will still own the building, and so we will pay a lease agreement to the contractor once we are able to move in. And there won't be any expense to the charter school until move-in happens. And that's already been worked out in a lease. We haven't signed the lease yet, but we're in a good faith agreement until final approval is made, and then we'll enter into that official lease.
Okay. That's all I have right now. I'll turn it over to someone else.
All right.
This is Member Hamilton.
This is Tanis Loring, and I was just wondering about your teacher prep period, because when I looked over the meeting notes for your school board work session, I saw that you only have a teacher prep period on Friday after 1 o'clock, and I was just wondering how you're going to make sure that teachers feel prepared for the classes and are keeping up with grading, because I know that, at least in my area, teacher prep periods have become a really big issue because with block scheduling in high schools and various scheduling conflicts in the elementary schools, our teachers are feeling a little bit less prepared than they used to, and I just want to make sure that we address it in your area before it becomes as big of an issue as it is in mine. So I was just wondering kind of what your reasoning was for that, and just kind of get a little bit more information.
Okay. So our school will still meet the expectation of 180 minutes of prep time spread throughout the week in 30-minute chunks. We have the advantage of each grade level cluster being K-1-2, 3-4-5, and 6-7-8. Each cluster will have an aid. So woven in throughout the week, we have moments in the day where the aids can cover things like recesses and lunch periods, student lunches, in order to give the teachers some prep time earlier on in the week. And then in order to reach our 180 minutes, then that's where the Friday afternoon time finishes out that 180 minutes.
Oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense. Thank you
so much. Yes, they'll still be getting a daily prep, and then Friday ties up all the loose ends.
Okay, that makes sense. I actually really like that idea now that you have the now that I know that there's more earlier on in the week and then the big chunk at the end. That actually makes a lot more sense. Okay, thank you.
Hey, Member Hamilton.
Thank you. Hey, it's exciting to see all the prep work and all the hard work you ladies have done and the rest of the staff there at the school. Thank you. Our local charter here has just gone to a decision to go move up to 9 through 12 as well. And has your board had any discussion, if you guys expand about having facilities that are going to meet your needs down the road? Has your contractor done like a phase one, phase two? Is there enough land to do more? Are you guys stuck once you build a K-8 school? That's my only question.
So we're definitely going in with this as K-8. There is a nearby, like I said, just next door charter school that goes 7 through 12. But as far as our actual building, we haven't talked to the contractor about expanding, but knowing the layout of the building, it is certainly possible. As far as land goes, he is subdividing a giant piece of land to get a piece for the school. And the current owner of the land is very in tune with what we're doing. His family is into education as well, and so they support what we're doing. And if we ever reached a point where there's growth for our school, I can, with conversations we've had in the past, I can totally see that family be willing to give more of their land for the school to grow. And that land piece that we have as well gives us great access to nearby parks, which have soccer fields and baseball fields. It's part of this giant piece of land, and they would be willing to let us put things like cross-country ski trails on that piece of property as well. So they're very flexible and very excited for what we're trying to create in North Pole.
that answer your question, Member Hamilton?
Sounds good. Thanks. Merry Christmas.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Member Scott.
Thank you. During my time on the Matsu Borough School Board, I participated in the review process of charter school applications, so I understand and appreciate the preparation that goes into submitting one to the district, and I thank you for being here. Relating to Member Van Deest's first question about how this school will serve the needs of students in that area, I've looked through your website online and saw the interest survey section. You're capping class sizes at 22 students. I really have three questions. The first is, how many families responded to the interest survey?
At the time that we presented to the school board, we had only been advertising that interest survey for about 4 weeks. And so this, we're talking about beginning of June. We had only advertised it for about 4 weeks. And at that point in time, we already had parents on a scale of 1 to 5 who chose 4 or 5 for whether they would be interested in sending their student to the school. And we had 99, rated 4 or 5 students, which is exactly half of our school's capacity. 198 would be our actual capacity. So that was early June. We have continued to get those survey responses, and in most grade levels, with just the survey results, we have classes who have exceeded that 22 student capacity. So we're already anticipating the application process to going to lottery based on those survey results. But it does go to show that that interest is so high here in our community.
Thank you. That leads to my second question. Which grade level saw the most interest?
The greatest interest came between 4th and 7th grade. And the lowest numbers were kindergarten, actually, which is also surprising. However, our district in the last couple of years has made a shift to all-day kindergarten, and so now that we're also all-day kindergarten and no longer different in that way. But anyway.
So the last question, to kind of get a sense of the response, is what values did the families identify as being most important to their child's learning environment?
I would say the community focus and the physical activity. A lot of parents were excited about the increased physical activity. A lot of the comments that we received on those surveys made mention of just how much they know their kids need to move and feeling like there's just so much limitation within the, traditional school format and the priorities that have been in place. So that piece has been very widely received. And then that community piece, there's so many families that even are willing to share ideas of ways we can get involved in the community. And so they're excited about that for their own child. And we like that we're already seeing parents give that feedback, that insight into this is how I'd love to see my kid participating in my community.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Chair Field, this is Rebecca.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I read through the pages of minutes from the local board's meetings, and I was impressed with the amount of time that local board has put into reviewing this school. I also noticed, or this application, I should say, and I noticed that it was not a unanimous decision at the end. And so I think there's been a lot of background work done. I probably don't have a lot to add, but I am always interested in the diversity of public schools. And how are you assuring that your school will be representative of whatever neighborhood you end up in? How are you making sure that your school is as diverse as Fairbanks and North Pole are?
So we see an incredibly high need for this school to be accessible to all. We teach in the schools right now, right here in North Pole, and
things like bus transportation. So many families cannot get their kids to school because of schedules, whatnot, without that bus service. So we've made that a priority. I don't know the exact percentage, but with the area we're in, free and reduced lunches are incredibly high. And so we're committed to also having accessibility to that free and reduced lunch program. We've talked to the nutrition services here locally and worked out how we can provide that to them. We do really want to see parents engaged in what their students are doing at school, and so we do have an expectation of volunteer hours. But that being said, we also have created a volunteer bank because we know that within our community, parent schedules and how much time they're tied to work and to provide for their family, and they can't not work. That's just the reality of our community. We're creating this volunteer hour bank where siblings or just interested community members can come into our school and still provide that service and that interaction with our students, but be able to bank those hours and share those hours with families who otherwise wouldn't be able to meet that expectation. With our school hours, we have heard from families that the early release on Fridays could create a hindrance just because of those work schedules and accommodating what do we do with our kids after school. But we have already reached out to multiple organizations and daycares and churches, and we know that we have to have some sort of after-school program on Friday for that early release. And it won't be led by teachers. That'll be their contracted prep time. But we have made that a priority as well because we want the school to be able to accommodate all families. Charter schools have this reputation of being an exclusive school and having, you know, but that's not North Pole. That's not where we live. And in order for us to be able to thrive and for the students to be able to thrive, we know that we have to address all four of these things.
Thanks. That helps a lot. So when you talk about busing, your school will be served by the regular district bus service? Is that the plan?
So just with the layout of our community, well, I should rewind. The school would be open to anybody in the Fairbanks North Star borough. Fairbanks people could make the drive to North Pole to send their children to our school. The area that we are able to accommodate bus transportation for is inclusive of all the zones that would feed into North Pole Middle School and North Pole High School. So that encompasses three different current elementary schools, Chickasook, Midnight Sun, and North Pole Elementary. So we're creating a bus route that would service those zones. And in a conversation that we once had with the transportation department, they put it on our radar that let's look into this deeper, but we may be able to reach out even to Salcha or to the Eielson schools and to provide that bus transportation. So that's still a conversation that we're still having with them, but it's definitely one that is taking our main goal of, you know, the North Pole three elementary school zone and making it even bigger.
Okay, thank you.
This is Member Thompson again. I have one question that I forgot to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with your 10 full-time teachers, when you have maximum capacity, do you have any special education teachers?
Presently.
So currently we do not, but until we have our student base and know exactly what our student load is going to look like as far as IEPs and whatnot, we do have access to the other charter school, which will be right next door, and could share a special education teacher with those other buildings. So, and that's what other charter schools in our district are doing. And as well as we do on our board have at least one teacher who is duly certified in extended learning and elementary education. So we would be, you know, that would
so do, perfect, so does the, so does the charter school next door have a special ed teacher right now, or is that something you would have to jointly?
No, they do.
And you've
and
discussed.
And that person is a part-time teacher at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
This is Member Kowalski.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for presenting to the board, Allison and Sandy and others. I wanted to ask a question about how is this charter school different than the district's current efforts towards personalized learning? I see in the charter application an effort to individualize instruction, but I'm also aware that the entire school district has moved in that direction with some structures that have been put into place to ensure that. And so I'm wanting to know what are the differences in this school's approach.
One of the biggest differences is we'll be using Renaissance daily and weekly to help us personalize even further learning for students. And then in addition, the MAP test that is in spring, winter, and fall.
Okay, so are you saying that other schools aren't using Renaissance daily and weekly?
Correct.
Okay.
Then we'll also be the multi-age explorations in the afternoons, creating those K-1-2 environments, 3-4-5 environments, and 6-7-8 environments is also another way to personalize that learning and give the students more options as opposed to residing in one classroom with limited options. It gives them a choice in their learning in those three grade level ranges.
And this is Paul. This is Paul with the department. And unfortunately, the Discovery Peak Charter School provided about a 21-page PowerPoint prior after the board packet was already sent and delivered. So you missed on some of this information. But one of the things that I've noticed that really sets the school apart is they look at SB 200, which requires or it encourages at least 90 minutes of activity or 90%, 54 minutes a day of physical activity, where this school increases that to 191% of the recommended amount. So they have 150 minutes of activities throughout the day. They have what's called morning movers, school-wide exercise, active brain breaks, mid-morning movers. You know, so it has it's one of the uniquenesses of this program that I saw was that they incorporated a lot of physical activity throughout the school day in addition to the academic side.
Thank you. And then my next question, just because I'm familiar with how lotteries seem to work once a school is established and then moving forward in terms of creating a diverse student population. What types of preferences is the lottery going to use for when it runs? Are there any family preferences? Things, and I know that I'm familiar that in Fairbanks, if you're a teacher in a school, including a charter school, your child has enrollment preference, but what are the other preferences that are running?
So, yes, we do have the teacher preference based on our FEA contract. Other than that, it's sibling preference to a point, being that if there is space available for the siblings of a family, then they would be able to enroll. Otherwise, they would be placed on a wait list. And truly, that is the only preference that we have in place. We wanted to create the greatest opportunity for new families to enroll when space became available.
Okay.
Any other questions, discussion? Okay, thank you. And sounds like you guys have done your research, and thank you for answering all of our questions and doing the best you can over the phone. It's difficult when we got to do this step over the phone, but thank you for joining us and all the effort you put forth.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, next up is the New American Association of Librarians School Standards presentation.
Okay, so the board is being asked to learn about the National School Library Standards with the goal of adopting these new standards for Alaska. I'll just say to the board, Deb Rinio was kind enough to meet me in Anchorage and gave me an overview, shared with me resources, and in that conversation, I was very encouraged that a lot of what she talks about in her presentation really aligns with what the board has laid out in the Alaska Education Challenge in terms of priorities. So I think you'll be interested in this presentation. So thanks for being on. And a letter of support for the standards came to us just yesterday, I think, or the day before. So it was too late to be in the board packet, but we'll make sure the board sees that in their next packet. But I wanted you to know that we did receive one letter of support yesterday. And with that, Deb, I'll turn it over to you. Are you there? She's been on, so hold on just a minute. Maybe she's on mute.
Okay. Can you hear me okay now?
Yep, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to present and for taking the time. I'll just introduce myself briefly. My name is Dr. Deb Rinio, and I am a former school librarian from Fairbanks. And currently I am teaching as an adjunct professor at UAF in the Library Science Department and also for the School Library Certification Program for Montana State University. And I was also on the 7-member committee that wrote the 2017 National School Library Standards that I'm going to talk to you about today. So I'm well-versed to tell you about them and also at the end answer any questions you have. But before I launch into the standards themselves, let me tell you about why it's time for an update. And if you want to follow along in my presentation, I think this starts on page 46 in your packet, and I'm moving on to the next slide right now, page 47. So our Alaska Library Information Literacy Standards were adopted in 1999. That's almost 20 years. And in that time, our society has rapidly changed from one where information was mostly found in books and the library to one where information is found online in a variety of mediums and locations. Our students are not only finding information, but they are creating it, interacting with it, and interacting with each other around it. And in today's world, digital citizenship, the ability to evaluate information, seeking multiple perspectives, and understanding how to collaborate with each other are critical skills no matter how our students end up participating in our society. Unfortunately, our current standards are so outdated that they're essentially defunct. And although they're still on the books, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who's still really using them explicitly. More than that, they reflect a world where students visit the library to find books, check them out, and then leave. They're information-based, focused on the information task, and not on the learner. The new standards, on the other hand, are competency-based. They focus on desired skills, knowledge, and dispositions of a learner completing a learning experience, as opposed to a specific statement that describes exactly what they'd be able to do in a measurable way. And in that way, they're focused on the learning process and can be incorporated or integrated into any content-based curriculum, as opposed to just being specific to the library itself. So on this slide, you'll see there's an example of a National School Library Standard competency compared to an Alaska standard. And the Alaska standard is a student who meets the content standard should organize and use information to create a product. Essentially, what this means is if a teacher handed a student a bunch of facts and asked them to put it in chronological order, they would have met this standard. But that's not particularly something that is going to help our students succeed academically or in life. On contrast, the National School Library standard that would be comparable is that learners gather information appropriate to the task by organizing information by priority, topic, or other systematic scheme. Here, students not only have to use critical thinking skills, but they have to participate in a full process that involves them deciding the best way to organize their information based on their particular needs. So it's much more complex. In the next slide, you'll see some more distinction between the two sets of standards and how they could be enacted. Alaska standards were written for a librarian really to teach in isolation. And although teachers are also responsible for these standards, they often don't have the training necessary to teach these concepts, just as a math teacher wouldn't necessarily have the training to teach social studies and vice versa. With the National School Library standards, the librarian enacting these standards is expected to work with a teacher to go beyond the curriculum and help students do things such as collaborate and inquire within the context of that curriculum. So let me give you an example. Right now, and with our current standards, you might see a scenario like the one on the left. An English teacher brings a class to the library, maybe for a World War II paper. The librarian is going to spend one class period talking about the library's databases, and maybe one class period showing students how to cite sources. The students will then return to their English classroom and do the rest of the assignment in that classroom, not in the library, and write a paper, and then they're done. On the other hand, a school utilizing our National School Library standards might look something like this, where a librarian, social studies, and English teachers all together collaborate on this World War II project. The librarian teaches students how to ask good questions, how to evaluate the information, how to find sources in the library databases and cite their sources as well. After several days of research where the librarian is on hand to help students, the students will create an artifact that represents what they learned. They might make a 3D sculpted model using a library's makerspace. Other students might decide to create digital posters or websites. Some might try the library's iPads to make augmented reality displays. Each student choosing the approach that makes the most sense for them and their question that they're answering, all personalized to that student. And then they might showcase their work in the library during a parent night, where members of the community are invited as well, and parents and teachers ask students about their work. As you can tell, these two scenarios are very different. Today's libraries are thriving places where librarians collaborate with teachers to ensure students are prepared for career, community, and college. So if you go to the next slide, you'll see how, just like the positive trajectories identified in the Alaska's Education Challenge, the National School Library Standards support these same ideas. They support the development of literacy, CTE, reducing the achievement gap, retaining educators, and promoting safety and well-being. And I'll go through and explain how it addresses each of these things. But if you go to the next slide, I'll first give you a brief overview of the structure of the standards. The standards are a competency-based system composed of six shared foundations: inquire, include, collaborate, curate, explore, and engage. And as I mentioned before, these are not relegated specifically to the library or the librarian, but are concepts that are addressed by a librarian within the context of the curriculum in collaboration with teachers. But no matter what a discipline a student is engaged in, whether they're doing math or English or social studies or CTE, there's always room to inquire, to build new knowledge by asking questions, thinking critically, identifying problems, and developing strategies for solving those problems. There's space for inclusion by respecting diverse opinions and seeking those opinions out. There's opportunity to collaborate with other students, but also with teachers and communities. There's a need to curate, to make meaning for oneself and others by collecting and organizing information. There's room for exploration by engaging in a growth mindset, discovering and innovating. And there's always a necessity to engage ethically with information, to learn about digital citizenship, demonstrate safe and ethical creating and sharing of knowledge, and understand what it means to live in an interconnected world. So if you go to the next slide, I'll walk you through how these standards apply to those positive trajectories, and we'll start with CTE. The National School Library Standards support the four C's, essentially: creating, collaborating, critical thinking, and communication. And through these standards, they ensure that students have the skills necessary to engage in any task, whether it be CTE-based or otherwise. These core skills are crucial to the hands-on work that students engage in during authentic CTE-based tasks, and they're the type of skills that employers are looking for in their prospective employees. On the next slide, we'll talk about the achievement gap. The standards are inquiry-driven, which means that students explore issues of personal significance within the context of the standards. And studies have shown that this type of inquiry-driven instruction helps close the achievement gap by allowing students personal choice, developing higher-order thinking skills, and fostering interdisciplinary connections to the community as well as their academic work. Moving to the next slide, they also support student reading in multiple formats for a variety of purposes to ensure that all students not only become strong readers, but develop a love of reading. It's important to note that a love of reading is tied to reading behavior. Well, in other words, students are more likely to read if they enjoy doing it. And they're more likely to enjoy reading when given the opportunity to make their own reading choices from a collection of diverse materials in a variety of formats that are curated by trained librarians who can help students help the right student find the right book. On the next slide, I'll talk a little bit about collaboration. One of the key components of recruiting and retaining effective educators is providing them with an atmosphere of professional growth, opportunity for success, and giving them support while allowing them intellectual freedom. An inquiry-based instruction is a natural fit when it comes to personalized learning, because it puts the teacher in the role of facilitator, guiding the student through the process of discovery and supporting learning at their own pace. Furthermore, studies show that when librarians and teachers collaborate, teacher self-efficacy increases. Those teachers become more confident in their own abilities and become more willing to try new approaches, knowing that they have the support from a competent colleague. When teacher self-efficacy increases, teacher burnout decreases, and retention increases as well as increasing student academic achievement. And finally, on the next slide, the standards promote safety and well-being by teaching students digital citizenship skills, the ethical use of information, and evaluating information for accuracy, validity, and cultural context. As it notes in the subtitle on this slide, fake news can have real-world consequences, and we must teach our students to evaluate information so they can discern what is real and what is fake, what is true and what is misleading, what is opinion, what is in fact, and how to ensure they're not examining only one side of the issue, but varying perspectives. In our information overloaded world, these skills are necessary not just for academic purposes, but for becoming well-informed adults. The last slide are the references that I cited in this presentation. And now I'd like to repeat the goal here and to ask you to consider reviewing and revising the Alaska Information Library Science Standards, and consider adopting the National School Library Standards. One final thing to note is that because I was on the committee that wrote these standards, Alaska had pretty good representation as these were being written. In addition to my own feedback and direction, there were two focus groups that were conducted with school library staff in Alaska during the development of the standards. And since the standards were released in 2017, many school library staff in Alaska have already received training on them from conference presentations and online courses delivered both in our state and nationally. In addition to the letter of support that Commissioner Johnson mentioned before I started speaking, I also have letters of support and resolutions from the American Library Association, Alaska Library Association, Alaska Society for Technology and Education, Fairbanks Education Association, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, as well as an individual educator. And I plan to send those along to you. That I didn't have them in time for this board packet, but we'll make sure that you receive those so you can review them in the future. So thank you again for your time and attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
This is
okay,
Member Thompson. This is Member Thompson. I have some comments. Okay.
Yes.
I'll just go. Dr. Rinio, I really appreciate these standards. They're very straightforward. I want to say down to earth, real life. I like the focus increasing CTE opportunities, which is often left out of things, but that is as real life as you get. The other items they fall in line and complement the Alaska challenge recommendations and priorities and all of those things. It's truly like a breath of fresh air to read through these and see the language and how clear it is and how relevant it all is. So I commend you and those who did this work and reviewed these proposed standards. I just think they're great.
Well, thank you very much.
Any other comments?
This is Member Kowalski.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Deb. I just wanted to know, you said that there was good representation from Alaska throughout this work, and that's really great. I'm thankful for that. Can you describe any conversations about how this works out in small rural schools with these new standards, if they're to be put into place?
Yeah, so we talked a lot about how that came up a lot. In addition to myself, of course, there were six other members of the committee and there were other people from rural areas. And we talked about schools that don't have librarians, schools that are very small. And one of the things that's great about these standards is that they're not discipline specific, and they're not really even library specific. Ideally, they're enacted with a librarian who is working with teachers, but we recognize that that's not the reality in many schools. And so they encompass concepts that are relevant no matter what discipline you're looking at, no matter what grade level you're looking at. And so just like any other set of standards, they would need to be reviewed and incorporated during curriculum revision processes, textbook adoption and that sort of thing. And with teachers, just applying them within their curriculum that they use. In addition to that, of course, there's always support from the Alaska State Library, I'm sure, through resources that they have, the state databases and stuff like that, to help with resources to deliver that curriculum.
Thank
Does that
you.
Answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you, and I agree. It's long overdue, and it looks good, and thanks for all the work you put into it and presenting.
Thank you.
Okay. If nobody needs a break, we'll keep moving. Does anybody object to that? Okay, we'll move on into the business meeting, and at the start here, I'd like to make a motion to amend the business meeting portion of the agenda to add an agenda item, agenda to be the changing the board's meeting date from January 23rd, 24th, 2019 to February 4th, 5th, 2019 as agenda item 9E.
I second the motion. This is Member Thompson.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
I'll have discussion when we get there that I won't be able to make it.
Okay. So that's so if we can have any other discussion?
This is Commissioner Johnson, and I honestly can't remember. I think I sent this out to the board or somebody did, but we're juggling schedules with the legislature, also wanting this to be a face-to-face meeting with the board, wanting to hopefully get an opportunity for you to meet face-to-face with the governor. So we're trying to make all that happen along with as many schedules as we can. So I know there's at least a couple board members that won't be able to be there in person, and I'm sorry about that. So we're just trying to juggle that all together. Obviously, this is ultimately up to the board on if they want to approve this or not. So I think a healthy discussion is fine. But just wanted to point out that.
This is Member Thompson. If this is going on the consent agenda, then we aren't going to be discussing it.
Do you want it on the consent agenda, or do you want it a separate item?
Well, based on if you get down into 9B and so forth, the way they do the motions, it's in consent agenda, but they're all separate motions.
No.
So
they're not separate motions. It's all one motion. You would have to remove it from the consent agenda to discuss it separately.
Well, then we can amend. Then I'd like to amend. I would like to amend my motion to move it to item 10 outside of the consent agenda.
Say it again.
I second that, Barbara Thompson.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So if we can have a roll call on the amendment, moving it to item 10 first.
Member Loring? Colonel Van Meter?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Hemshoot?
Yes.
Member Kowalski?
Yes.
Member Scott?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Van Deest?
Yes.
Chair Fields?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Hearing none, motion passes. Now a roll call on the original motion, please.
Member Loring? Colonel Van Meter?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Hemshoot?
Yes.
Member Kowalski?
Yes.
Member Scott?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Van Deest?
Yes.
Chair Field?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing no changes, motion passes. Okay. Thank you for that. Now we'll move into the beginning of the business meeting. Item 7, questions from the board members regarding standing reports. Let's just go ahead and take all of them at once, and I don't know if we have all of the people there that you probably would want to have their commissioners, so you may want to make mention of that.
Okay, so in terms of staff, we have Karen Moline, who is here and who will be our acting deputy. I have to leave state and I'll just be gone for a week or so, but I'll be letting the board know more about that. Joanne Wyrock, our attorney, and in just a moment I'll introduce the board's new attorney. Sandra Meredith is here, Deb Riddle, Aaron Harden, Heidi Teschner, Paul Pressing, and myself. That's who's in the room. Oh, and Janelle Vanas, Superintendent of Mount Edgecombe's on the line, and so is Patricia Fredrickson, the Director of LAM. And Susan Sonneborn, your new attorney's online too, and I'll introduce her in a minute.
Okay, great. Thank you. Then I'm just open up to questions for board members. So as you have questions, please ask if you have any. How are all the reports coming in off of the PEAK testing and the schools in the way of putting their reports together and their plans of improvement?
So can you repeat that?
Well, I was just asking how it's going with, you know, the different levels based on the peak scores of the schools, how those plans are coming together with interacting with the different schools and districts and how that's going.
So for the accountability, okay, so the designations have been sent out to the different districts and schools. The school improvement team has reached out to several of those comprehensive schools and are trying to help them determine what the needs are. And it's all up on the website right now. We are working with the rest of the districts with their report cards. So there's lots of information about data about students and how they did with PEAKS, participation rates, and the assessments, attendance rates, all those pieces that are outlined in our SO state plan.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Field, this is Rebecca. I had a question on page 79 of the board packet. There's a table about suspensions and expulsions. And I'm not sure, so this is our the report from the accountability and data team. And on the table that I'm looking at, I just was curious how the number, it's just when I look at data, something that stands out to me, I get very curious about. So the number of assaults in 2016-17 was 598, dropped in 17-18 to 132. Did we change the definition, or was there truly a drop in the number of assaults? Can anyone explain the difference in those numbers, since it's such a big difference?
Paul Pressing's going to answer that.
Right. So, you know, Todd Bros is our suspension, expulsion, and truancy. He is on a vacation in Cambodia right now, or Thailand, so lucky Todd. But there hasn't been a change. I believe that's a drop, but I can't confirm that until Todd gets back from his trip.
So, Member Hemshute, we will make a note of that question, and when staff gets back, we will make sure to follow up.
Okay, thanks. It's not urgent. I just would like the assault numbers to have dropped because there are fewer assaults, but I don't want to make that assumption when there's such a big difference in those numbers. It's not an urgent question. Thanks.
Great question, though. Thank you.
This is Member Thompson. Member Hemshute, I was looking at that number when you mentioned it and noticed that physical fighting's way up, but the assaults down. So I don't know why it doesn't clearly make sense to me, but I guess taking it to the level of an assault just didn't happen as much, which is probably a really good thing. But physical fighting looks like it's way up.
And I'll just throw in, for what it's worth, this is Commissioner Johnson. This is not unlike attendance reporting. So the system, not just in Alaska, but across the country, is still getting used to reporting data in a consistent manner across the system, so from school to school, from district to district, and from state to state. So, you know, I'll let the folks closest to the data provide the board with the most accurate answer. But I think in a general sense, it's good for the board to know that there's still an adjustment period going on across the country in consistent reporting and defining some of these, defining some of the data.
And this is Paul again, too. One of the things we've changed with our suspension expulsion truancy data is we brought it into the SRM, our student report manager, trying to get our data a little bit cleaner and better. But the commissioner's exactly right. The definition from state to state, district to district, to school is still something that we have to address.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, and hearing none, we'll move on to item 8, Commissioner's Report.
All right. Thank you, Chair Field and Board. So like I said before, the first thing I want to do is welcome to our meeting the Board's new Assistant AG that will be working with Luann Susan Sonneborn, and I just want to give you a little bit of introduction to her and want to thank Luann for sticking with us and being a steady presence for us and just an ever-present reassurance to the staff here as we work with her, and has done a great job of welcoming Susan. So as you know, our former attorney took a position, another position in the Department of Law with a different department. And so the Department of Law has hired an attorney to replace her, and that is Susan Sonneborn. She started at the Department of Law on November 27th. She is participating in today's meeting telephonically, but we really do look forward to a time where she can be face-to-face with the board and meet you all. Susan started to practice law in Wisconsin in 2000, and she moved to Alaska in 2010 and started teaching paralegal studies at Charter College. She then worked for about 5 years at the law firm of Jermaine Dunnigan and Owens in Anchorage, which is a firm that works with many school districts in the state. And so her work there was representing school districts, so she's very familiar with the people that we serve. I know the Department of Law is happy to find an attorney with such relevant experience for us at Deed, and so I just want to say welcome to Susan and give her or Luann an opportunity to say anything to the board as way of introduction.
Well, I can say after working with Susan for a couple weeks that I think she's very with it and she's very collaborative, so I've really enjoyed working with her already. But and I was thinking about some personal information that might be of interest to the board, and I thought to know what grades her children are in and what schools might be of interest, but that's not something I know, but maybe that's something that Susan can chime in with.
Yes, thank you. So this is Susan Sonneborn, and first of all, thank you very much to Commissioner Johnson and to Luann for the warm welcome. I really look forward to working with the board and working with the department. And I am the proud mother of two children, so I've got a seventh grader and a fifth grader. My seventh grader is at Romig Middle School, and my fifth grader is at Sand Lake Elementary in the Japanese Immersion Program.
All right. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Luann. And board, I know that it encourages you this morning. I had a phone conversation with Susan, and she had just taken her daughter to school, and somebody with that kind of practical experience with the public education system is going to be really meaningful to the board, and so we welcome her. Next, I want to just thank the board for your patience throughout the transition time here, and though transitions come with very difficult goodbyes, as this one has for us, we are so fortunate indeed to have benefited from the amazing work done by your staff, especially over this last year. I just want to note to the board as a way of review the successful implementation of a school accountability system that will have a positive impact on students in our state for many, many years to come, as well as leadership that's been provided in the department that you all have noted has changed the culture of Deed. So transitions also bring new faces, though, and I'm honored to let you know that my former colleague in Copper River, Tammy Van Wy, will be joining us at Deed in January, and I really look forward to introducing her to you, sharing with you how her strengths are going to be an essential part of moving the department forward and working with the strengths that we already have here. And I just can't say enough to the board about the people that we have working at Deed, and it's really an honor and a privilege that I get to stay and work with them and for you in the coming months. So thank you very much. I wanted to give the board an update on our earthquake response. As you know, schools were some of the most impacted systems in both Anchorage and MATSU. First, I want the board to know, as Dr. Parity said, what a phenomenal job both superintendents did in responding to the emergency. Additionally, their boards, their students, their staff, and families all responded in ways that we can all admire. Though the earthquake did reveal some weaknesses in our buildings, it clearly demonstrated the strength of character in the people of Alaska, particularly those that serve our children. So I just want to give a shout out to them and let the board know what an amazing job they did, as you've already heard. Rather than give you specific information about that may already be out of date, I want to encourage you as State Board of Education members to go to the websites of each school district, MATSU and Anchorage. There you will find up-to-date information on individual schools, and you'll also be able to observe the incredible and methodical response to these emergencies that both districts have developed and implemented. It was a privilege to be with those leaders and their teams as they responded, and I'm thankful that the board supported my time being away up there. I want to point out that we had some folks here at BEAD that also went up, Larry in our facilities department, and the districts really commented on the support they received from the department. So the board was represented very well in providing support to those districts that really were doing the work on the ground. Additionally, I want to note that the governor made it very clear to me that he did not want any bureaucracy to cause those responding to hesitate in the work that needed to be done. He told me directly the day after the quake to focus on protecting the students and the staff of those districts and not spend time trying to protect bureaucracies. For example, I've waived calendar days so that the focus can be on safe buildings rather than the length of the school year. And so we'll continue to support them and continue to reach out to those districts. I also wanted to just remind the board, as we look to the new year and change coming in the new year, I want to remind the board of something I mentioned here before, and that is it's time that we have a review of all of BEAD's regulations. I've asked Chair Fields to appoint a regulations review committee that will be meeting monthly to identify regulations that, one, should remain as is, two, be revised, or three, be eliminated. I'll be engaging our stakeholders in that review process, as well as hopefully drawing upon strengths that we have here at the department with some of our staff as we review regulations. That will take quite some time. It's a process I did with the Board of Education in Copper River, and I look forward to doing it with a committee of the board here, and then also working with stakeholders and leaders in the system to have a thorough review of our regulations to make sure they're working for students and not against them. Another thing that will be happening in the new year is ESSA revisions. There will be some changes coming soon that are really just filling in some data that we had placeholders for when we first submitted it. But we'll be working with stakeholders to look at any other changes that we need to suggest and revise in our ESSA plan. I think that is all I have in my report. I wanted to end by just saying thank you for your work and all the support you've provided to the department in 2018. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I'm very excited about the new year and the work that we're going to do together. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Any questions, comments for the commissioner's report?
This is Member Thompson. I have one comment, and it's been said, Dr. Giles Parody said it and Dr. Johnson said it, but sitting here in Juneau, in the Juneau area, watching the earthquake information unfold and getting calls from people I knew who were scared to death and trapped in pantries with their dogs, which sounds like a good thing to me, but they were scared. I was watching the news constantly, and I saw Dr. Bishop and Dr. Goyette and others from their district speak about what was going on, what steps were being taken, and I was just amazed at the calm, steady presentation of information. There may have been internal moments of chaos or panic, but it did not show, and things seemed to be so well taken care of that I felt really good watching the responses from those districts. And I'm sure Chugach and as you said, Jim Mariner and the IDEA program were also affected. But why gosh, it was it was amazing. I mean, when I look at other disasters in some other states, and I consider this kind of a disaster, I just saw such professionalism and care and thoughtfulness. I was really impressed, and I'm sure those of you who saw these people on TV and read about their remarks in the newspaper, I'm sure you feel the same, but I was proud of Alaska in that moment.
Chair Fields, I think this is I'll just jump in and do it right now. This is a great opportunity. As the board knows, Member Thompson is retiring, and so this is her last meeting. And the comments that she just made just reflect who she is and who she's been as a state board member. As you know, she worked at the department for many years. So she has brought to her membership on the board a really unique and helpful perspective to you as fellow board members and to us here at the department. As you can imagine, last week was a difficult week here. And as always, Member Thompson shows up with encouragement and hugs and other ways to let us know that she's supporting us and helping us. And so I wish I had words to really express how much we appreciate all that she's given to this department and the students of Alaska. And I think that you as fellow board members know what an essential part she's been to this board. So I want to recognize her after those comments because they just reflect who she is and who she's been to it. So thank you.
Thank you.
I was going to make a joke and say, what, I'm leaving? But no, I am retiring, so thank you, Commissioner.
Any other comments, questions for the Commissioner's report?
This is Member Van Dees, and as a person that actually went through the earthquake and was involved in a school being closed for a while here in Mat-Su, I just want to say thank you to Dr. Goyette with her leadership. It was fantastic. I mean, we've had some issues that have cropped up in our district, and, you know, we do have a middle school that has closed and is now meeting with the high school on portables. So there have been some things that have happened, but overall, as a member of the staff of this district, there was not ever a time that I thought, or even the teachers and staff in the building that I'm at, you know, what are we doing? How come we're doing this? It was all just very laid out for us. So I really appreciate Commissioner Johnson just coming on site quickly, because I know that there was significant damage here as well as in Eagle River and Anchorage area. So we got shook pretty good. It was a scary experience, but, you know, most of us made it through fine other than broken glass and pictures falling and all of that kind of thing. So it's amazing that nobody actually, there wasn't a fatality anywhere, especially when you look at pictures of some of the schools and what fell and fish tanks breaking and all kinds of craziness. So thank you, Commissioner Johnson, and your team for just coming quickly when we needed you.
Well, thank you. And I know you represent so many staff in Mat-Su, and I've just heard amazing stories of how kids were cared for, families were cared for, fellow staff members were cared for. And so really the thanks goes to you. And it was a privilege to be there and see Dr. Goyette and Dr. Bishop and that their whole team. It really was a privilege to sit there and watch them in action in how they responded to the earthquake. So thank you.
Okay, if there aren't any other comments, we'll move on. Any other comments? Okay. Well, I'm glad you're safe, Lori, during the quake. And, even out here in Glen Allen, it shook us a little bit. It was the length that got us. Of course, we have a house that's four stories high and on stilts, and so it shook us pretty good, and we weren't even that close to it. So I'm glad everybody was safe, and I'm glad some things are back to normal now, and it will continue to be. So thank you guys for your comments on the importance of that, and I'm sure we all echo the same thing, and I'm just glad everybody's safe. Moving on to item 9, the consent agenda. Do we have a motion?
I move we adopt the consent agenda.
This is Keith. I'll second. Way to go, Barb.
Okay. Any? It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
This is Member Van Deest, and I guess I'm a little confused why we would have Discovery Peak Charter School application or an item like that approving minutes of the meeting. That doesn't make sense to me, but could somebody help me understand that?
Why the question is why we would put the charter school in the consent agenda?
Because they're approved by the district and then
right. This is Paul. It's the discussions happen, questions are answered, and I guess they're approved by the local school board as well.
Yeah. Member Van Deest, I think it's a great question, and I think it's something that, we've just discussed here that I think we need to spend some time with the board on our charter school processes. Our laws are pretty old. They may be fine as they are, but also our processes for how they come before the board. So there's a couple of different ways to look at it. Some people may look at it like, it really is the local school board. It's gone through a process there. It's been vetted, and especially in a large district like Fairbanks, it's gone through a lot of a vetting process, and so they've approved it, and so the state board really is just putting a stamp of approval on the local school board's approval. But then there's, a legitimate way to look at it and say, just because they've approved it doesn't mean we will approve it, and so it warrants a separate agenda item and more scrutiny. And so I think that's a discussion that we need to have, and we need to have a little bit of a work session on our processes for charter schools when there's not one on the agenda. So that's probably not a satisfying answer, but it's a need, and I think that your question wisely points out a need for us to put that on a future agenda.
And this is Member Thompson. I do recall meetings in the past where we have removed the charter school from the consent agenda when there have been additional questions or concerns. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have it as a separate item, but I know that when there have been questions or concerns, it has been taken up separately.
Right, and that I would echo that. Historically speaking, it is always, they've always gone under the consent agenda, and if there are concerns specific to, because a lot of times we'll have three or four on there sometimes, and then one will get pulled for a separate discussion item. It probably will come down to somewhat of what any given board is comfortable with at any given time. So it's definitely worth a discussion at some point. Thanks for bringing it up.
And this is Member Thompson again. In my haste to get to this agenda item, I moved to adopt the consent agenda. I should have said I moved to approve the consent agenda, so I think I need to amend the motion that I made.
Great.
So this is Member Van Deest, just for clarification. So with charter schools, they always go on a consent agenda item, approving with a minute. So a board member would have to, if they wanted to approve the minutes but not approve the charter school, how would they vote?
So what has happened in the past, so it doesn't have to be on the consent agenda. We can, that's been past practice, but we can certainly change that. What has happened in the past is if a member wanted to pull it off the consent agenda, they did that when the agenda was approved. They pulled it off the consent agenda and made it a separate item.
Okay, okay, that helps me. So we're not going to have other items on a consent agenda like this that would be, I can't even come up with anything, and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. It just doesn't make sense to me to have approving minutes and then having an item that had a lot of discussion all be wrapped up in one. So that's all I'm saying.
Yep, no, it's a valid point. And each board, so even the local school boards around the state do their consent agendas a bit differently. So some boards include a lot of things, even like hiring in consent agendas. And then other boards pull those things out and make them separate agenda items. So what we need to do is better equip the board to realize that at the beginning of the meeting, when you approve the agenda, you can pull anything off the consent agenda that you want to, even minutes. So as you review the board packet, when you get to the meeting, if there's something on there that you feel like warrants further discussion, you just amend the agenda and pull it off the consent agenda and make it a separate agenda item. And then also, I think, as we get to know each individual board, as members come and go, we have a sense of what they prefer on or off the consent agenda, and we make adjustments accordingly.
Thank you. That actually helps me. I'm not voting against the charter school, but if I wanted to, I would feel trapped. So that's all I'm saying.
Yep. Valid point. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussions? So did you actually amend, did you formally amend your original motion?
Yes.
Seconded.
And Keith will accept the amendment.
Okay, so we've got, it's been moved and seconded. So could we have a roll call on the amendment?
Member Loring? Colonel Van Meter? Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Hemshoot?
Yes.
Member Kowalski?
Yes.
Member Scott?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Van Dees?
Yes.
Chair Field?
Yes. Does anyone want to change their vote? Hearing no changes, the amendment to the motion passes. Now roll call on the original motion, please.
Colonel Van Meter?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Hemshoot?
Yes.
Member Kowalski?
Yes.
Member Scott?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Van Dees?
Yes.
And Chair Field?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Hearing no changes, motion passes. Thank you. Okay, item 10, changing of the meeting date. We have a motion.
This is Member Thompson. I move that we change the January 23rd meeting date to February 4th and 5th here in Juneau. 23rd and 24th to February 4th and 5th.
In shift second.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Discussion.
This is Member Van Dees, and like Dr. Hamilton, I will not be able to attend either.
This is Dr. Hamilton. I had This is a Monday, Tuesday, 4th and 5th, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I will be able to do that in that case. I will be able to attend.
Great.
And this is Commissioner Johnson, Member Van Deest. No requirement to, but if those dates don't work and you wanted to call in, please let me know and we'll make whatever accommodation we can for your participation. If you can't attend, we'll make sure to brief you up afterwards so you feel like you are fully aware of what happened at the meeting.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Colonel Van Meter? Dr. Hamilton?
I'll be there, yes.
Second Vice Chair Hemshoot?
Yes.
Member Kowalski?
Yes.
Member Scott?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Van Deest?
No.
And Chair Field?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote at this time? Hearing no changes, motion passes. Thank you. Okay, last item is board comments, and I'll just go down the list here. Colonel Van Meter, were you able to get back on or not?
Hey, just Colonel Van Meter, I'm sorry I had to step out for just a second. What was the question?
Oh, we're just to board comments, so if you have some, great. If not, that's fine, too. Just going through the last thing.
No additional comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Member Hamilton.
Yes, I agree with this whole earthquake situation, how exciting it was to read that our districts, our people pulled together hard and fast and no lives were lost. Grateful that we had the opportunity to offer prayer at Governor Dunleavy's party down here in Soldotna, Kenai area, to give thanks to God for his protection over our children of our state. And I want to just tell you again, I am grateful. Thank you to our staff and folks there that stepped in where it was needed. This is not the last earthquake to hit Alaska. And so as we prepare, this was perhaps a soft knock on the door. There still could be something else in the next 50, 100 years. We don't know, but we want to be prepared. And this is a great opportunity for us to button up maybe some areas that we were a little weak in. So I encourage the department and the staff and the school districts that are listening to go through those one more time and make sure that we're set for something that might be worse the next time. And the other thing I want to say is Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Okay, thank you. Second Vice Chair Hemshoot.
Yeah, I've made a little bit of a list here, so I'll be as expeditious as I can be. I think everybody has said what I've been thinking about the earthquake, but I know everybody's network blew up that day and continued to blow up after that, and I just have such respect for the educators who, along with taking care of their students in their classrooms, had their own personal, property damage and whatever else they were dealing with. And so I'm grateful for how the situation turned out, and my heart is with all the educators who had to do a pre-winter break classroom move. I can't imagine a greater, I don't know a better term, but a greater hell than that as an educator. So well done to everyone involved in that. I just want to put some things out there that I don't know. Obviously, I'm not looking for comment on them today, but we had talked about a standing rules committee. I don't want that to get lost in the shuffle, and there has been a shuffle between natural disasters and the transition and everything else. I understand some things are going to temporarily slow down, and that's fine. I don't think there's a lot of urgency, but I don't want to lose sight of a standing rules committee. The charter school report that Paul talked about, that's something that I would like to see happening at some point in the future. And again, I understand not everything can be done at once, but when we can get to it, I'd like to hear more about that. And the commissioner mentioned maybe looking at some of our policies surrounding charter schools and seeing if there are some productive updates we can make. That would be great. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that it came to my attention Alaska will not be testing NAEP science this year, and I am unhappy with that choice, and I don't know what a state board's role is, if there's a role for the state board determining which parts of NAEP our state participates in, but I think if Alaska is going to shine on any test anywhere, it will be science, and I want that opportunity. So maybe down the road there can be a conversation about NAEP in Alaska, and maybe I need more information. So perhaps if that conversation could guide me to understanding better why we're not testing NAEP science, then all to the good. I'm just going to say what Dr. Hamilton didn't say this time, and since he didn't say it, I will. These phone meetings are less productive, I think, than meetings where we actually get to talk with each other and the people in the room. So I would be a fan of more opportunities to work face-to-face with people. And then I just do not have words for saying goodbye to Barbara Thompson, and I hope it's not goodbye. I can say bon voyage. I can say best wishes. I can say truly, deeply, heartfelt thank you, but I can't say goodbye. So we will see you back in the room at some point, BAT, which is my favorite nickname for Barbara Thompson. So anyway, Barbara, thank you for all that you've done. And with that, I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Member Kowalski? Okay, Member Scott?
Oh, hey, this is Kowalski. I didn't have my mute button off.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to echo everyone's appreciation to the school district superintendents, the school district leadership and teachers, and all of the responses that we've had to the quake. I think that for all of us who had family in the area, it was a touch-and-go type of day. I wasn't there, but I was certainly hoping and reaching out and trying to hear from people. And then in the following days, watching the news conferences, it was really heartwarming to see the care that all of our leaders across the South Central area took in the response and how ready they were. So both kudos to the school district and the broader leadership in that area. I am happy to hear from the commissioner that there's an alignment in priorities with the new governor, and I think that really brings some hope to carrying through with the Alaska's Education Challenge, so I'm excited to work more in that area. I was also happy to hear that the standards that Deb Rinio was talking about were in alignment, as Barb Thompson pointed out, with the Education Challenge, and I'm looking forward to more conversations around those standards and how the state board might be involved in supportive of that effort. My handwriting is a little messy. I am very interested in an upcoming work session or meeting to discuss charter regulations and maybe law, and just looking at some of the strengths and weaknesses around process that might need to be shored up. And I'm also thinking that we might need to bring on something similar to that around the board's role in approving teacher prep programs, so that we have a clear understanding in both those very different arenas, but we have a clear sense of understanding of what our role is, so that we can do the right work when those come up, or if those come up. And then thank you, Barbara, for your leadership and commitment. I knew you back in DEED days, and I have really come to respect you then and now as a state board member. So best wishes in your future endeavors. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Member Scott.
Thank you to Jeff Blackburn, Susan Anderson, Victoria Flint, Tim Parker, Keith Brady, Mike Robinson, Deb Bianchi, and Dr. Lisa Stiles Charity for your participation in the public comment portion of the meeting. I enjoy hearing from you all. Second, welcome to Susan Sonneborn. I look forward to meeting you. Relating to the earthquake, I just want to challenge each of us that we continue to support our schools, teachers, students, and classrooms with whatever means we are able. And that, you know, my first thought that day was the students and staff inside our schools, and, you know, immediately reached out to, you know, check the safety of those that I knew, and my thoughts continue to be with them, those as we rebuild. And to Member Thompson, arigato for your service, your positive presence, and your encouragement.
Okay, thank you. First Vice Chair Thompson.
Well, I'd also like to welcome Susan Sonneborn on board. Luann will be missed. I'm looking at Luann. Rebecca will be missed, and it's just been great to have her on board, and it'll be great to have you on board, Susan, if you're still on. And I would like to thank all the board members, past and present, department staff, past and present, and Commissioner Johnson for the last 5 years and all of the dedication to improving education in Alaska in all forms and for all students. I wish all of you good health, happiness, and clear voices when it comes to talking about and making decisions about the future issues that face our state, current and future issues that face our state. We have a lot to work on, and I think we can get there. And to you, Rebecca, we have a date in the pool at the Mount Edgecombe campus. I swore to her that I would come over to Sitka and actually put on my swimsuit and jump in with her when the pool opened, so we have a date as long as there are no cameras. and that's a must. So I will see you sometime in the near future, Rebecca.
Well, Barbara, I know the timing of this is not good, but I do have to say there's more than one way to make a tsunami, and you and I can get it done.
Member Van Deest.
Thank you for letting me comment. One of my first comments is I guess I'm unclear on the process of adopting standards because we've heard from the librarian on the national library standards, and then also we heard some public comment about the computer science standards that, from what I could glean, were actually written by Alaskans. And I guess maybe I'll reach out to the commissioner and his staff and just have them help me through that process of how that works. I'm similar as Rebecca with the Standing Rules Committee. I know that's something that her and I and Sandy have volunteered to do, and so I don't want that to get lost in the process either of transition that's happening. And I want to say a welcome to Susan Sonneborn. I'm looking forward to meeting her, and it's great that she's fitting in so well, and I think that's just a testament to working with Deed and with the people that are there and the commissioner and his leadership. And Barbara, you're going to be missed. You've been great to work with here this past year, and so I wish you the best in your future endeavors and wherever the road may take you. And lastly, I would just like to say a big thank you to Governor Dunleavy for allowing Commissioner Johnson to continue to be the commissioner of Alaska. I think it's great. He's got good leadership. He works well with the staff at Deed, and I think as this transition continues to unfold and new people are placed where they're placed, I just look forward to what he has in store and moving forward with the Alaska's Education Challenge. So thank you, Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, welcome to Susan Sonderborn, and hope to meet you soon, hopefully in February. And just want to say welcome to Tammy Van Wy, and again, department, you're very welcome for taking another one. So we will try to figure things out here on the Copper School District again. Merry Christmas to everybody, and Member Thompson, I can't thank you enough just for your friendship, for your acceptance. You know, you come onto a board like this, we all have, but those people that just welcome you, even though I was a year before, you're just a very warm heart, and it just made me feel comfortable to be around you. So thank you for everything you've done for the state over the years. Thank you for what you've done for the children. Thank you for your friendship, and that's what I consider you. I consider you a friend, not a board member. So just thank you for everything you've done, and I just wish you the best. With that, without objection, we will adjourn at 2:21. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Well, congratulations.
So, Barbara.
Your host is exiting the conference.